from the clubhouse to the tailgates and beyond.
Fly ball, deep left, gone!
Welcome to Brewers Weekly. Here's your host, Dominic Cotroneo.
Rest up, this is it. This is the last off day of the first half. We're about to do the final home stretch sprint into the All-Star break. Here we go, Brewers Weekly. Welcome in, everybody. This is a Thursday off day, pre-recorded, of course, here on WTMJ and over on ESPN Milwaukee first thing Friday morning on YouTube. I'm Dominic Cotroneo. Thanks for joining us. Now, quick timeout. Go vote for All-Star if you haven't already. Voting actually probably already ended today. I know phase one ended, I believe it was 5 Eastern time. We'll get the results here coming up here shortly. But Bryce Terang was still trailing to get into that final two of the phase two voting. I'm not here to explain how All-Star game voting works. Maybe we'll have a take on that next week's show about, you know, oh, the small market teams get gypped, which I don't agree with, actually. I think one of the things that happens is, quite frankly, we don't value in-person voting as we do voting on your phone, and it becomes easy, but that's for a topic for another time. If you're still able to vote, go vote for All-Stars. I mean, William Contreras and Bryce Terang are certainly deserving of it. Even Jake Bowers, even though it's an uphill climb for him. But the Brewers will obviously have at least Jacob Mizorowski, maybe Kyle Harrison as well, named to the All-Star game coming up in Philadelphia in a couple of weeks' time. In this episode, we're going to talk about this road trip briefly here on the top of the program. We're going to talk about Aaron Ashby and the bullpen after the craziness of Wednesday's finale against the Reds. I also want to do some ABS analysis. You know, I kind of had a sharp tweet over the week saying, like, what's going on with their ABS strategy? And I think I kind of have uncovered it. I want to give you the numbers of why the Brewers are doing it the way they're doing it offensively, that is. And then finally, I'm going to just list off a few trade targets. I got 7 names listed here that aren't named Tarek Skubal, okay? Because I feel like it's been very lazy of who's been available and what the media is telling you is going to be available and that sort of thing. I just got 7 names. I also want to double back onto that MLB The Athletic top 50 who's available, and I just kind of want to go through and explain to you there are no bats available. So there are 2 bats on my list, and we'll talk about that at the very end of the program. What a weird trip, right? Because I know series matter, and the Brewers go 4-2 on this trip. You stack that up, you go 4-2 on every 6-game road trip, you're doing something well. If you go 7-3 on this, you know, or I should say it should be 7-4, given they play 11 games in 10 days coming up on this final road trip after this homestand, you're gaining games. It does not matter if you get swept by one team and then win the rest, or if you lose a series and sweep, just keep staying above 500. Keep adding to your record. And now the Brewers are 20 games above 500, earlier than they've ever been in the season. We're only 78 games into the year. We're not even at the halfway point. And the Brewers are at 50, or about to be at 50 wins already, right? They have a chance just winning one against Chicago that you are going to be at 50 wins before the halfway point, which comes on Monday. I mean, this is a team that, as I said, leaving spring training, and I'll reiterate here, you can go find it deep in the podcast archives and on opening day. I just felt this team was better than last year's team. And even the things that have gone wrong, right? Even Luis Renjifo getting DFA'd with my opinion saying he was going to be a bounce back candidate. Whoops. Joey Ortiz has been the same Joey Ortiz, but he's shown signs of life here and there. But now he's a part-time player. David Hamilton is now a part-time player. Garrett Mitchell's played virtually every day, which is good news, despite not having Jackson Churio for a month, despite not having Andrew Vaughn for a month, despite not having Christian Yelich for 3 weeks. I mean, the list goes on despite all that, despite Quinn Priester not even throwing a pitch for the Brewers this season. Despite all of that, the Brewers have still found a way to be one of the best 3 records in baseball. And as we said at the end of Wednesday's postgame show, it's a reminder, yes, you lost that series to the Braves. You won the finale, of course, which was huge. Hey, they're starting to come back down to earth. Philly is chasing them down right now. Philly is currently 4 games back of the Braves in the East. Like, that's going to become a battle. And if they battle each other out, that's going to naturally bring the winner of that division down a little bit. The Brewers are in a position where, okay, the Reds are very clearly not going to be the team that everybody hoped that they were going to be, right? They're going to have to be a team that considers selling at the deadline. I don't know what to make of the Cubs right now, given their entire starting rotation is hurt right now. 11 pitchers on their 40-man roster are hurt right now. I don't know what they're going to do. They're certainly not going to sell off, if you get what I'm saying, but the Brewers can kind of really push them toward the edge this weekend, depending on what happens. So putting all of that aside and recapping this week, the thing that I look at the most offensively for the Brewers, as bad as that Red Series went with runners in scoring position, right? The Brewers left a small village on base virtually every game in Cincinnati, even with six runs on Wednesday. Even with Christian Yelich going 1-for-16 on the road trip. Yeah, 1-for-16. Granted, only three strikeouts, but a lot of groundouts to the pole side. We've seen that before from Yelly. He hasn't got going. Garrett Mitchell came back down to earth a little bit. He went 4-for-20 on this road trip. Not great. Even David Hamilton, just one double, no extra base hits. He had seven strikeouts, four of them, though, on Wednesday. Churio cooled off, 6-for-26. That's a .231 average. Just two extra base hits, two doubles in Atlanta. That was it for him. But Turan got hot again. Contreras is white hot right now. Reached base in all five games on Wednesday. But the way I look at it is this offense found its floor, right? As bad as Monday and Tuesday were frustrating, they still won the games against a worse opponent, I understand. But that's the floor. Still getting opportunities with runners in scoring position and not cashing in on them. And I know they've been on this stretch, and I've pointed it out about their lack of timely hitting. This is how a baseball season goes. And I know we like to be first. Like, oh, see, I predicted the downfall. They can't hit with runners in scoring position. I promise you, the alternative of not even getting opportunities with runners in scoring position versus just not getting the hit with a runner in scoring position, I'm taking the latter every time. Because if you continually give yourself those opportunities, a lot of averages tell us it's going to work out in your favor. If you're not getting into those opportunities like the Reds were all week, and then all of a sudden you do get those opportunities, the Reds left 16 runners on base on Wednesday. 16. And they didn't win the game, right? I think that the way that the Brewers roll is still, they're a top three team if you just look at the simplest stats when it comes to runners in scoring position. But when you look at how the Brewers get to runners in scoring position, it's walks, it's base hits, it's infield singles, right? Those are hard to come by in the playoffs, as we saw last year against the Dodgers. But you mix and match that with maybe more Andrew Vaughn moving forward. Even Pat Murphy admitted it in yesterday's postgame show, saying, hey, he is proving that he needs to stay in there. And it's not just against lefties, right? Despite only having 13 plate appearances this road trip in the six games, he still went 4-for-10. He even drew two more walks and two strikeouts. He had the best at-bats of anybody not named William Contreras on this road trip. So I think the Brewers are at this point where they are understanding Andrew Vaughn needs to be virtually an everyday player, along with Jake Bowers, who has gotten back on track after having a cold stretch there the middle of the month. And now here at the end of June, he's starting to hit the ball harder again. The way I look at it for the Brewers offense, and again, we'll talk about at the end of the show of how little is out there when it comes to reinforcements for your offense. This is the core that it needs to be. It needs to be Turang. It needs to be Contreras. It needs to be Bowers. It needs to be Vaughn. Now, Churio, maybe at the top of this order eventually, not in the middle of this order. I like Churio hitting two. I think I might like hitting him one better. We'll see how that plays out for the Brewers moving forward. Yelich has been ice cold, really, since he, you know, really since the beginning of June. And if he's going to stay in the leadoff spot and he's just going to be an on-base guy, that's fine. If he's going to be the on-base guy at the top of your order, that's a pretty darn good on-base guy. But the Brewers are in this conundrum of lineup construction. Well, how do you fit Vaughn in more often? How do you keep Bowers not just playing right field because that leaves you vulnerable defensively? There's a lot of things that go into the levers, right? So we talk about it all the time. When you pull on one lever, does it lead to another getting pushed in a different direction? And one of the levers that the Brewers are consistently pulling right now is, okay, let's get a little more offense, right? Let's pull for a little bit more offense, having both Vaughn and Bowers in the lineup. Generally, that means Bowers is in right and Vaughn is at first. While that simultaneously slightly brings down your defense, but I think Vaughn's been a perfectly serviceable first baseman. Bowers is slightly better than him, especially when it comes to scoops, and he's left-handed. And then obviously Bowers in right field doesn't have the same range as Sal Frelick does, but hey, talk about offense. We talk about what the Brewers are capable of. That's one of the things that is key for them to figure out over this next month, leading up to the trade deadline. How comfortable are you with Jake Bowers virtually playing everyday right field and Andrew Vaughn being at first base? Could we see Vaughn at third? I tend to doubt it. But crazier things have happened. We've seen it in emergency situations, but it is very clear, and Murph hinted at it again, Andrew Vaughn's going to start playing more, and they need to make it happen because the best version, the best nine the Brewers have features Andrew Vaughn in it, no matter what handedness the pitcher is on the other side. That's my two cents. I'm sticking to it. That's what I take away from this road trip against the Braves and the Reds. And now they come home for the Cubs and the Reds once again. Really important stretch against the division, and you can really kick the Cubs while they're down this week. So we'll talk about that coming up all weekend long with postgame shows. Now let's kind of get our analytics hat on. Let's talk about the ABS system. Let's talk about what the Brewers are trying to figure out with how can they get more strikes? How can they avoid more balls? What's actually going on with the Brewers' strategy with ABS? Back with more in a moment here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's get into the baseball savant version and part of the program here. This is where, again, as a pre-taped episode of Brewers Weekly, welcome back. I encourage you to check this out over on YouTube. It'll be posted first thing in the morning on Friday on ESPN Milwaukee with all the bells and whistles that we want to show you here on one of the greatest websites ever made, and that is Baseball Savant. Now, if your eyes are just going to gloss over when we talk about advanced numbers and we talk about run expectancy, this isn't the segment for you. And you know, you can rejoin us in about 8-10 minutes when we're starting to talk about Aaron Ashby. But the way I look at ABS challenges and the way that we're all learning about how this system works, because the other thing we also have to recall and remind ourselves, personally, I've seen it in a handful of games in the minor leagues. I'd never worked with it in the minor leagues, okay? Because, you know, this started to really expand in the minor leagues in the early 2020s when I was starting to cover the Brewers, obviously, up here. So I've talked to people who have, you know, played with it, coached with it, understood it a lot better than I do. The other fact of this is that it has changed a little bit over the years. Initially, it was the very front of the plate. They settled on the middle of the plate. They have tested full ABS where there's a total, you know, a lack of input from an umpire and it's only the robot calling balls and strikes. Nobody liked that. They've tried more challenges. They've tried fewer challenges. Everything settled on with surveys and player and fan input on this current system that we're in because it worked so well in the minor leagues. And I also want to put out there a reminder that when you look at this Brewers team, majority of this team just missed, the vast majority of this team, especially the young players, just missed getting the chance to play with it in the minor leagues. The only guys that really got to play with the ABS system consistently that are currently on the roster, you would say, is Cooper Pratt and a little bit of David Hamilton in his time in AAA with the Red Sox the last couple of seasons. But aside from that, you know, your core guys, you know, the homegrown guys of Garrett Mitchell and Bryce Terang and Sal Frelick, they didn't get to play with it in the minor leagues. So they're still feeling it out, and it can explain their low numbers. Obviously, Christian Yelich didn't play with it as a big league veteran. Obviously, William Contreras didn't play with it as a big league veteran. So that's the first thing to remember offensively, is that spring training just isn't enough time generally to get used to the ABS system, just one spring training. Now, there are ways to use some of the tools and gadgets the Brewers have to learn your ABS zone. That's what spring training is for, using the traject machine that has been used by a multitude of teams, including the Brewers, to say, all right, let's learn your edges of the strike zone. Let's learn what's a ball, what's a strike. Let's put pitches on the corner, see if you can know them and that sort of thing. That's a good way to test how well you know your ABS zone. Now, the height and the bottom, that's a fixed number. So that's another thing that you can train on, but that's not the point of this thing. I just want to present the numbers as why the Brewers are in this scenario that they're in when it comes to ABS challenges. So when I go to Baseball Savant and I show you the league summary, if you go up to Baseball Savant, you see there's literally an ABS tab available on the top menu bar. But when we come out down here to the league summary, I also want to point out the league averages while we're here too. We come down to the overall total challenges, okay? The Brewers have totaled the 10th most challenges in baseball, Okay, that's not a low number by all. Now, you see all the colors, and we know how everyone's been a little bit brainwashed. Whenever you see blue, it's automatically bad. Whenever you see red, it's automatically good on Baseball Savant. And I'm not discounting that. But there's a few things I want to point out here. Yes, it's minus five runs expected challenge rate, and that's a lot of it having to do with their offense. We'll get to that in a moment. But the first thing I look at is the fact that they're league average in total challenges. This flattens both offense challenge and defensive challenges. 53% of the time they're accurate. So a reminder to everybody, nobody's getting 100%, right? Nobody's perfect when it comes to ABS challenges. And the fact that league average for every kind of challenge is only 53% is still only a coin flip. Statistically speaking, that's not significant to say that this is a absolutely no doubt way that you can get better. Now, you look at the teams that are best at it, say the Reds, say the Tigers. There are some outliers here within them. For instance, the Tigers have one of the best challengers in the game in Dylan Dingler. The Reds have the most frequent challenger in the game in Sal Stewart on an offense. In fact, he has more than a third of their challenges all alone, kind of like how Gary is for the Brewers offense. But the fact that they've won more than 60% of their challenges is certainly an outlier. I would rather be in the league average category than in the bottom half category where you see the White Sox, the Nationals, the Guardians, and the Pirates, who have really struggled with their ABS challenges so far this season, especially when it comes to runs expected versus what you get and all that stuff. So we'll get into the expected stuff and what matters when we start to talk about that. So now I pull up, this is for a team's offense and what I really wanted to get into with the nitty-gritty here for the Brewers and their ABS system. Total offensive ABS challenges. The Brewers are tied for last with the San Diego Padres. Now put on your thinking cap for a moment. What do the Brewers and Padres have in common? They are both very experienced teams with players that did not get to use the system a lot down in the minor leagues, right? Manny Machado didn't use it. Fernando Tatis Jr. didn't use it. The list goes on of guys that they are relying on that didn't get to really experience the ABS system. Meanwhile, the Brewers, we already talked about that on their side, they are both below league average when it comes to success as an offense. But that league average comes down slightly when you are the offensive, you know, when you're the batter challenging, right? It comes down to 47%. So it's less than a coin flip when you're challenging. The Brewers are only successful 41% of the time when they are challenging on offense. And when we dive in a little bit deeper and we look at who is actually challenging for the Brewers offense, it's no surprise who comes up first, and that's going to be Gary Sanchez. He has the lion's share of challenges for the Brewers. 22 of the 54 for the Brewers this year have been challenged by Gary Sanchez. But now as we look at it player by player, who's doing it well, who's doing it infrequently? Sal, as we joked with him during spring training, I'm not going to use it. He's second on the team with six challenges this season. He's got two of them right, four of them wrong, which isn't that terrible as a 33% expresses. But again, the Brewers don't have a large sample right now of using the ABS challenge to their advantage. When we look over here to the right of this chart, and you see percentage of challenges reasonable and reasonable challenges taken. Remember in the first couple of weeks of the season, we were talking about Gary's use of the ABS challenge system. There was one in Kansas City where it was like a 2-0 count and already with nobody on base and two outs, and he tried to challenge a pitch. Like, the Brewers are in the reasonable category of like, hey, man, that's probably not a spot to burn a potential challenge. But the other thing about the Brewers that I think is so interesting, the Brewers are number one in baseball in chase rate. They do not swing out of the zone. They know the strike zone extremely well. They're top three in walks across all of baseball. They know the strike zone. But yet, here they are in the bottom in baseball at how infrequently they put that to the test. I think that's very interesting. And the number that really is the smoking gun to me about the challenges that they lack thereof take, it's one thing to only have 54 challenges. They're still pretty successful when it comes to the leverage situations. They've flipped four strikeouts. They've added two walks. Their expected challenge rate is a lot higher, meaning, hey, these are the type of pitches that are in the shadow of the strike zone that other teams are challenging and you're not. So even those opportunities, you may not get all of them right, but that could be an opportunity the Brewers can use more to their advantage. But the reasonable challenge rate is the lowest in baseball. just 13%, because this is where it's really funky. The Brewers have seen the fifth most opportunities to take a reasonable challenge. A reasonable challenge is explained here in green. It's when at least one of the following is true. The original call was incorrect, regardless of how in or out of the strike zone it was. If the pitch is within 3 inches of the strike zone's edge, and an overturn would gain at least 3/10 of a run to their advantage, or the pitch carries an expected challenge rate of 20%. Now, I don't want to get lost in the minutiae on those two numbers. We talked about that in that April edition of Brewers Weekly. But to put a bow on it, again, the Brewers have had the fifth most quote-unquote reasonable opportunities to challenge pitches. And they have the lowest rate of actionable, reasonable challenges to take, right? Whether it would flip a count from 1-2 to 2-1, right? That's an opportunity to change your expected run value. Obviously, strikeout flips, walk flips, changing from 1-0 to 0-1. Those are the things that add up over time. But the last thing I want to point out about the Brewers' ABS strategy, defensively, they have been one of the most frequent teams challenging. William Contreras is a big reason why, of course. He knows the strike zone very well behind the plate. They have the second most challenges as a defense in baseball, only behind the Miami Marlins. What do the Marlins do? The Marlins have extremely young catchers and guys that understand the strike zone. And by the way, the Marlins aren't even calling their own game. It's the dugout that's calling the game. So all they care about is getting ABS challenges right, and they do a very good job of doing so. The Brewers are above league average when it comes to, or right out about league average, I should say, when it comes to defensive challenges taken. They have flipped 16 strikeouts. They have pulled off 5 walks, but this is where the kicker comes in. We talk about that reasonable challenge rate. We talk about how often the Brewers, or lack thereof, do it offensively. Well, they're right in the middle of the pack, bottom half of the pack, when it comes to opportunities for a reasonable challenge at 69%. But then when you look at the reasonable challenge taken rate, it skyrockets up to the top 5. So it's completely inverse of what the Brewers do offensively behind the plate, right? William is a little bit more aggressive with his challenges behind the plate, and that seems to be the strategy. The Brewers are telling William Contreras and the rest of the offense, quite frankly, these challenges are meant for defense. These challenges are not for us offensively. Pat Murphy said it during spring training. There are times you're just going to have to eat a strike because that is more valuable to keep that challenge for the 7th, 8th, 9th inning when you need it, as opposed to burning one that you're not sure about in the 4th inning with a runner on first or that sort of thing. And I think the numbers really bear that out to say the Brewers care about stealing strikes and being able to trust William to know the zone as well as he does behind the plate. That's why I think the Brewers at times are a little too passive, in my opinion, when it comes to challenging on offense. But yet, you can see the numbers. It bears out to say, no, we're just giving them all to William. We want William to be the guy challenging. And that's their strategy. They're sticking to it. Okay? So that was a really deep in the weeds segment talking about ABS challenges and that sort of thing. Up next, though, we're going to talk a little bit more about Aaron Ashby. And I know he had the tough game in Atlanta. He really bounced back well against the Reds on Monday and Tuesday. We'll talk about his use. We'll talk about what pitches are working for him and why the Brewers need to make sure they really kind of hit the throttle and make sure that they know how much they're asking and redlining Aaron Ashby, the lefty that wants to pitch every day. Back with more in a moment on this taped edition of Brewers Weekly on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Call to the bullpen. Aaron Ashby, get hot. Of course, every day. I'm ready. I'm ready to go right now, Skip. So Aaron Ashby, he loves to pitch. Sidebar, shout out, Brewers Unfiltered. He was on Brewers Unfiltered podcast. Adam McAlvey, Tim Dillard, Sophia Minnert. They brought that back, finally, in June. Don't know what took so long, but good to hear from Aaron Ashby. We've had him on this program before as well during spring training. One of my favorite dudes to talk to in this clubhouse, and really cerebral of how he goes about pitching, because he's got a starter's arsenal in the bullpen. He has got 3 swing and miss pitches that work to both sides, meaning righties and lefties. He can generate ground balls. He can generate strikeouts. He generally doesn't give up fly balls, which was what made Saturday in Atlanta so odd, and what this month of June has been so odd for Aaron Ashby to have the struggles that he's had this month. I mean, here in the month of June, 6.35 ERA in 11 innings of work, He's allowed 12 hits in the 51 batters he faced and only four walks. So it's a lot of contact. Three homers has jumped up. And another quick little sidebar. The Athletic had a story from Eno Saris, friend of the program. Eno wrote about how the drag coefficient on the baseballs has started to drop again, and it's dropped to like 2019 levels. And if you know anything about 2019, the ball was juiced that year. The ball was flying. Look, I'm not putting my tinfoil hat on, but maybe, just maybe, something's going on again. But we'll let the data lead us in that direction. This segment is to talk about Aaron Ashby and what is a little bit different about him this season versus last season. First of all, one of the things that I point out with Aaron Ashby is simply the mix of pitches is almost exactly the same as a year ago. The only thing that he's done differently this year, he's thrown more sliders than he did a year over year. He's added 8 points of use on his slider versus his changeup, right? The changeup's virtually the same. He's pulled that use from his curveball, I should say, but the sinker is virtually the same. The changeup's virtually the same. He's pulled from the curveball lever and pushed it into the slider lever. But another thing about performance, and we look up to the sliders here on Aaron Ashby on Baseball Savant, you'll notice that fastball run value has dropped, you know, really, really large. And you look at it year over year, it was one of his best pitches last season. And I look at his movement over there on the right, it's virtually the same here. The orange glob that is his sinker is pretty close to the same. That's not significant enough to really worry about. But when we look into the performance specifically with Aaron Ashby's sinker, let me just pull up here on the contour chart what happens on base hits. You see a very bright red dot practically right down the middle for Aaron Ashby, okay? That's not a great spot to live with a sinker, no matter what handedness you're facing. I toggle this to last season. You see them down in the zone, and you see them away. You don't really see a big dot right in the middle of the strike zone for Aaron Ashby. So why might that be that he has a lot of base hits right down the middle, and why did he still give up hits a season ago? Well, when we scroll down and look at his sinker here on Baseball Savant year over year, okay, he still has given up almost as many hits as he did all year on the sinker a season ago already this year, despite the velocity being virtually the same, the whiff rate being virtually the same, but the batting average has jumped 70 points on why he's been able to, you know, have less damage against him last season. What I point out is the lack of ground balls specifically on the sinker. He averaged a ground ball with his sinker last season. This year, it's more of a soft line drive, and when you get more launch angle on your sinker, that means there's a lot more fly balls than you'd expect against that pitch. I can even pull up his ground ball rate here when it comes to batted balls against the sinker year over year, and it's slowly gone down. 53% is not bad, but when you think about it as a sinker, a pitch that is meant to get ground balls, that's something to monitor. When I also point out the fact that for Aaron Ashby, as I pull up his baseball reference page now, Ashby is somebody that is being used a ton. Ashby is already approaching his season in innings last year. All right, he is 19 innings away from reaching last year's total in innings pitched. Mind you, he didn't spend the entire season in that bullpen. There was time on the IL. There was time for when he came back and he was dominant. And, of course, how much he was used in the postseason. The Brewers projected, and they're right on par with this right now, that you could get somewhere between 100 and 120 innings out of Aaron Ashby in this current role, this, you know, not using him as a starter, using him as a multifaceted Swiss Army knife in your bullpen. And the 10 wins obviously exhibit the fact that they trust him to do so. Do you know how hard it is to accrue wins above replacement without saves? I mean, he is almost worth a win despite having multiple blown saves and not having a single save on his ledger. A lot of it has to do with win probability added and that sort of thing. But the strikeouts are what WAR really loves. And the fact that he has 66 strikeouts in those 47 innings is certainly encouraging for Aaron Ashby. The whip has slightly gone up. The walk rate has gone up as well when you look at it year over year. Last season, his walk rate was 9%. Right now, it's 11%. But the strikeout rate has gone up too. So there's a couple of things at play there. I look at the sinker. It hasn't come out the same as what you're used to, of what the success that you're used to with Aaron Ashby. when I look at it, when the batter is ahead in the count, so think about it. You want to go to your fastball when you're behind. You want to go to a pitch that you rely on. And the performance against the sinker when the batter is ahead in the count, right? In general, and this is loosely termed fastball counts, right? This includes 2-1. This includes 3-1. This includes 2-0. This includes 1-0. Batters are hitting 321 and slugging 500 when they are ahead in the count against his sinker. And then when I put it to when batters are behind, they're still hitting over 300 against that sinker. There's something a little bit off about missing it up a little bit more, missing it down a little bit more like we showed on that contour map. The last thing also here when it comes to the sinker, again, the movement isn't statistically significant. Man, that's a tongue twister. Statistically significant enough to say, oh my gosh, he's lost so much movement. Oh my gosh, so much has changed. His averages are within an inch of each other from a year over year. But the one thing I pointed out here too, I was talking to some members of the Brewers coaching staff about his arm angle. And I didn't know if this was a byproduct of the shoulder surgery, but notice 21 through 26, his arm angle has gone up virtually every year, and now it's at the highest it's ever been at 52 degrees. And when I pull it up again, I'm only going to look at the sinker, and I'm going to look at the average arm angle by month now of 2026 season. Look at that. It's up to 54 degrees. He's actually throwing it higher. He's purposely throwing it with a higher arm angle. What does that mean for Aaron Ashby, and what does that mean for how a pitch performs? Sinkers are meant to move arm side, right? They're meant to move and sink. And when you are getting on top of the baseball, it is harder for that ball to naturally move and sink like it's supposed to. I am speculating here. I am not a pitching coach. But to see a 2-degree change of how much he's getting on top of the ball versus, you know, having it flatten out, you can get a little bit more horizontal run when you're a little flatter. And again, we are talking marginal numbers here. And anybody can look at a Baseball Savant page and tell you, oh, this is what he's doing wrong. There are reasons for it. There are personal feels that say, well, you know what? I feel more convicted with the other stuff if I'm more on top of my curveball, if I get that arm angle up like it's supposed to be. Because when I pull up now, we just showed you how the arm angle has changed with the sinker month over month. When I look at his horizontal movement month over month, it's a flat line. So it can't just be the arm angle. Maybe it's a visibility thing. Maybe because he's a little bit more upright, they can see the sinker a little bit better. It ends up in the middle of the plate. And just physically, if you're throwing it from a higher spot just ever so slightly, that, you know, maybe that 3 inches of height is replaced in the strike zone. As opposed to those sinkers being at the bottom of the zone, they're now in the middle and they're getting hit. Aaron Ashby has the nastiest stuff on the planet. But at the end of the day, the sinker is the most underrated pitch in his arsenal because he throws it 98 miles an hour. He can get ground balls with it. He's the rare guy that has a dynamic, nasty slider to pair with a curveball, to pair with a changeup. Most guys only have one weapon coming out of the bullpen. He has three. And if that sinker can get back to being the, oh, you're going to swing at this pitch and get a ground ball, the sooner the better. Because, again, the launch angle has gone up this season. The use is virtually the same. And yet, the average exit velocity against has actually dropped in the month of June. So there's a suggestion of a little bit of bad luck here for Aaron Ashby. So let's let the numbers level out and see how important he is going to be down the stretch for the Brewers. But they do need to give him rest. They do need to give him a chance to chill. Because in these 18 games in 17 days, I'm a little worried how much they're going to use him. But we'll keep an eye on Aaron Ashby throughout the rest of the first half. All right, let's wrap up this program with what you really wanted to see, the trade deadline speculation. Let's talk about some names that are not Tarek Skubal that the Brewers, I think, should be targeting. Final segment of Brewers Weekly after this on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let me go rapid fire about seven names that I want to point out that the Brewers could be targeting ahead of the August 3rd trade deadline. And I also want to use the Athletic's first big board for the trade deadline to just kind of show you how limited the trade market is for offense. Welcome back, by the way. Dom Catrodio, Brewers Weekly, recorded going till the top of the hour as we wrap things up here live on the radio. If you're in the podcast feed, you got nothing to worry about. Now, as I pull up the screen here, again, number one, Tarik Skubal. Everyone's going to talk about Skubal. Everyone's going to talk about Byron Buxton. And quite frankly, I barely want to talk about Byron Buxton, but he is somebody that would fit for the Brewers. But it just does not sound like the Twins are even going to make him available. Joe Ryan is intriguing, but I don't know if the Brewers are interested in a 1+1 for Joe Ryan. He's owed $12 million next year on a mutual option that will most certainly get picked up. But I don't see it as a fit for the Brewers, given the fact that they have a logjam incoming where if their three is Miz, Harrison, and Woodruff, where does Joe Ryan fit into that? You don't really carry four into the postseason. But nonetheless, as I go down the list here, you'll see the names that are just not realistic. CJ Abrams, not going to happen. Would have already happened already. Jeremy Pena, I don't think the Astros are going to sell. The American League is that bad. Seiya Suzuki, no chance. Wilson Contreras, no chance. The Brewers already have two first basemen. Now we get to the first name that I'm interested in. Reed Detmers at number eight. Starting pitcher. He's left-handed. Now, that's a pause. You're like, all right, another lefty. Now, Shane Drouin and Robert Gasser would probably be rethought of as he would pair with Kyle Harrison very well. But Reed Detmers, quote-unquote, has figured it out this season. He's pitched a lot better this year. He's actually been quietly very good the last couple of seasons, despite having an ERA north of six back in 2024. But for Detmers, the things that have really worked for him this season, number one is his slider. It's always been his bread and butter. It's something that the Angels, look, with due respect to the Angels, they've lucked into this. They are not a player development organization, right? To have Mike Maddox in the fold, to have him helping out Reed Detmers and getting him back on track to what his ceiling always was. He was a first-rounder reminder back in 2020 out of Louisville. Maybe it's another reclamation project for the Brewers to claim Detmers. Now, he would have two more years of control of arbitration, which thus makes the price a little bit higher. So that's the first name I wanted to point out from this list. We're all going to laugh about Freddy Peralta. The Brewers are not going to reacquire Freddy. Isak Paredes has been the sexy name for everybody on Twitter to say, he's a perfect fit, he's a perfect fit. I don't think he's a perfect fit. I really don't, because number one, dead pull hitter. Playing in Houston's a good fit for him. I don't know if playing in Milwaukee and the rest of the NL Central would be a good fit for him. Dead pull hitter in Pittsburgh doesn't work. Dead pull hitter in St. Louis doesn't work. And even left field's deeper than right field for the Brewers. I don't know if that's a great fit for the crew. He plays perfectly average defense at third. We scroll down, Ryan Jeffers on the IL, but he's a catcher. Where is he going to play? We scroll down, no one here is jumping out. Jaron Duran, you already have a million left-handed outfielders. But let me point out now here on the screen a few names that I want to say keep an eye out for. And I'm not doing like deep dive scouting reports on these guys, but I just want to point out, I've already said this name before and I'll say it again, Taylor Ward. I believe I said it on Monday night's postgame show. The StatCast numbers are interesting because his plate discipline, as the Brewers love plate discipline, is elite. He doesn't chase. He hits the ball squared up despite not having a lot of bat speed. He walks a lot. He strikes out league average. He doesn't swing and miss. He uses the middle of the field more often than he does pull like he did back when he was with the Angels and hitting 20, 30 homers a year. He's only got five homers this season. But when I look at him splits against left-handed pitching, he's got a 300 batting average and an 887 OPS. Two of his five homers have come against lefties. He has more walks than strikeouts against lefties. That's a fit for the Brewers. But where is he going to play? Is he going to be your DH? Is he going to be your left fielder against lefties? And you would move Churio to center? Maybe. That could work. Taylor Ward would be a rental, too. That fits. He does a lot of things the Brewers already like their hitters to do. Great discipline. Uses the middle of the field. Yeah, he doesn't swing the hardest, but maybe the Brewers can unlock a thing or two getting back into a playoff race. Now, the one thing I hold pause on with Taylor Ward, he's never been in a playoff chase. He's been with the Angels all those years. The Orioles are about to tear it down, but availability is the best ability. He has played virtually every game each of the last 3 years. Is he going to have an adjustment period to maybe not playing every day? That's something that I hold cause for concern for, but I think he would be a great fit. Now, when I look into the bullpen, and when I look at what's going on with the crew down there right now, Jarred Koenig is due to return this weekend. Now, I'm holding my breath on Jarred Koenig because the velo never came back down to AAA like we hoped it would. Still concerned about that elbow. If you get those four guys back to their form, meaning Koenig, Ashby, McGill and Uribe, that's a really darn good four. Could you add a fifth to that to really make it scary? A couple of names that jump out to me. Number one, Pete Fairbanks. He's another rental. I don't know what the Marlins are going to do. They may not even make him available given they signed him to a one-year deal. The fastball is down a tick given he doesn't have the same vert on it, but he loves his cutter. The cutter has been super important for him this season. The Marlins have taught it to him and have got it going. Now, granted, he only has 9 strikeouts on the cutter, a .280 average against it, but yet he gets 28% whiff on it. The slider's dynamic hasn't allowed a hit on the slider this year. You know if there's a team that's going to get the most out of your cutter, it's the Milwaukee Brewers. So I point out Pete Fairbanks. Another guy I want to point out that maybe you haven't thought about over on the Arizona Diamondbacks is Kevin Ginkle. I don't know what the Diamondbacks are going to do. I say this over and over because they have so many questions on their team right now. Ginkle has bounced back after a disastrous 2025 season. All right, the slider is back on track. Fastball slider, super simple mix. Slider does not get hit, fastball does. But when I pull up his splits, home versus road, reminder, NL West, tough to pitch in with Colorado and Arizona, of course. On the road this season, his ERA is down to 1.69. At home, it's 4.30. He's given up 3 homers at home, only 1 on the road. That's a good sign. And now a real deep cut. If we're going to talk about somebody that I think that no one would see coming getting traded, my Nick Mears Hail Mary, if you will, I want to pull up Justin Sterner from The Athletics. Justin Sterner is 29 years old. The Brewers did see him in Las Vegas. Doesn't throw hard, but he has great vert. He gets a lot of chase on his sweeper. The cutter's okay. He doesn't walk guys. He doesn't have an elite strikeout rate. But I think there are a few tweaks here with Justin Sterner that could make him Nick Mears 2.0 for the Brewers, right? You've got a breaking ball that generates swings and misses and chase, the best kind of swings and misses. You've also got a guy that has a verty fastball. It carries well. And also, somebody that gets lefties out, right, with that breaking ball. Lefties are actually slightly worse against him than righties. His whip falls under 1 against lefties versus righties. And then furthermore, he's much better on the road at proper hitting environments as opposed to Sacramento. His ERA away from Sacramento is 1.56. Now, that's a deep cut. He's got a lot of years of control remaining for the A's, but he's 29 years old. Generally, when you're a rebuilding team like the A's, you strike when the iron is hot. Those are just a couple of names I want to point out. We're getting ahead of ourselves here that aren't named Tarek Skubal. All right, that's going to do it. That's a podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Again, this is taped. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts. We got postgame shows all weekend long against the Chicago Cubs. Thank you so much for watching or listening. My name is Dominic Catronio. Keep on swinging.